We're not lawyers, we're not advisors. The correct way to do it, I start super narrow, right? Everybody's heard MVP.
I don't push people to do MVP, actually. Yeah. It's for experienced people, seniors people.
But it didn't quite, not all the features ended up surviving. We didn't hire a single marketing person for the first 2-3 years.
He needs you only a certain period of in a year.
It's probably one of the most important things, more important than your features, more important than your idea. Gravity on the business model is pulling towards enterprise B2B. If you are a digital and physical business, you're not a digital business.
Yeah, I'm an entrepreneur. I wanted to copy Clara.
The original idea for Clara was actually a bot.
Hello everyone. Today an interesting interview with Ahmed, founder of Clara. I'm happy to have him here because he has some unique business model which I want to relay to you guys and try to understand what is behind the Clara and how he came with the idea. Hello, Ahmed.
Nice to see you today. Thanks for the intro. I'm happy to be here.
So before we start, why we don't tell our audience what Clara is?
Sure. So Clara is a digital platform that helps entrepreneurs and businesses form their companies in a number of jurisdictions, manage those companies after formation, and manage their equity as well.
So is Clara a lawyer?
It's not. It's a very good question. It's a very good market perception question. We're not lawyers. We're not advisors. We are, enablers. It's software that's backed by corporate services. But we don't advise. We just help you get set up and help you manage your company and your equity.
So I would like to know how you came up with the idea first.
Sure.
And how you thought about the first business model. So where the idea came from?
So myself and my co-founders were, most of the co-founders are lawyers, and I'm a lawyer as well by background. I did different things, but one of the things we did is we had a law firm. And we did a lot of work for startups and startup investors. And we just saw a few things that kept coming up over and over and over again that were done really inefficiently and really expensively. And we really noticed that a lot of startups particularly were kind of priced out from doing things well because they couldn't afford the right advice. There's a lot of self-lawyering, Google lawyering, right? Let me just check what to do, and that can lead to disasters, particularly in this region, when the information online might be relevant for the US or somewhere else. So we thought, this is an area that is really ready for some digitally native solutions, not professional services that are tech enabled, but a truly digitally native, digitally first solution. So we brought those ideas together. And so where's the kind of simplest part to begin with, or what's the biggest need, what's the most universal need for startups? And that was, I need my company at some point, right? So we thought that's where we'll focus. We'll help you set up your company in a digital way, do it right in the right place with the right set of documents. And then from there it flowed, now that I have my company, I need to do certain things with it. I want to transfer shares. I want to do a round, bring an investor. I want to change my directors. I want to do my renewal. I want to manage the equity, my cap table. I have ESOP. I want to grant options. So everything just kind of flowed from that initial entry point, which is the company.
So I'm sure when you started the Clara, you didn't come up with the whole features which it is today.
Yeah.
So which features you have started with, and what business model?
Yeah, so I mean, the correct way to do it, I think, is to start super narrow, right? Everybody's heard MVP, minimal viable product. We probably started a little too broad.
I call it alpha or beta.
Exactly.
Because
exactly.
I don't push people to do MVP, actually.
Yeah,
it's for experienced people, seniors people.
Yeah.
And we are involved with the first-time startups.
Yeah.
So, and they come, I have an MVP. Okay, then let's go back with alpha first. So go ahead.
Yeah, exactly. And, that way is great. That way also has its advantages. So, and particularly what we're doing, which is pretty complex, right? So there's lots to think about, lots to do, and there was lots to digitize and to bring online. So we're in development for a long time. We're in closed beta for a long time. So the initial feature set, there was a few pieces to it. You could form the company. You also could generate contracts. You know, you could do like safes or grant agreements or other kind of startup contracts, advisory agreements. And there was also a data room that you could share, and investors could do due diligence, and they could comment on it, and they could use it to review you for the investment. So quite broad, but it didn't quite. Not all the features ended up surviving.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
So, but what I hear, it's something which we already deal with every day. Then, what is the added value to come to Claro, especially in the beginning? I always try to focus this conversation in the beginning, and then we take it to by the timeline further.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, you come to Claro for a number of reasons. I think, you know, we built an expert system using expert advice, experienced advice, best practice advice that we digitized over time. So it's the equivalent of going to a really, really good lawyer who knows what they're doing. But not at the price of a really, really good lawyer who knows what they're doing. Because it's a solved thing, right? You know, we know what you need. We've digitized it. We've scaled it, which means we can offer it to you at a better price point without sacrificing the fact that it's still best practice. You might luck out and end up doing it right, or you might luck out and end up going to the right lawyer, but it's much more likely that you're going to do something wrong or go to the wrong lawyer who might be a great lawyer but not experienced in the space or in the jurisdiction. You end up spending more time, spending more money, and then having to fix it later. So the advantage, number one, is that you get it right from the beginning at a good price. And that's not even going into, well, the fact that it's a much better design, a much better user experience. It's something that's actually built with digital in mind, which is really not something that we see in the market. There's a few things out there, but most of this space around company management and formation, entity and equity management, has been quite traditional and offline historically.
So it's key for me, first of all, the know-how for a first-time entrepreneur, very clear for him to come to the platform, understand what steps required, the documentation, the easy to get agreement template, which is also cheaper. Then what is your first business model in that?
Yeah, so our first business model was, and to a certain extent still is partly, going straight to consumer, I would say, going straight to the founder, startup. the person who wants to set up the company, wants to create the contract, whatever it might be. And it was a mix of, well, we've got like a freemium model on the software. So there's a bunch of stuff that you can use for free. And there's a bunch of features that are behind a kind of SaaS subscription paywall. So the idea is we can help as many people as we can for free. And then when they've matured enough to need some of the more advanced stuff, that's when they can start paying for it. And then the second model was around the company itself, because obviously when you form it, you pay a specific fee for its formation. And then you typically pay a specific fee every year to renew it, because we act as your registered agent. So a couple of different business models, but it was all kind of B2C with free, freemium, SaaS, and one-offs.
And was that enough to take you for a couple of years?
Yeah, I mean, that's what we've been doing, I guess, probably for the first 3+ years of the business. It was just all about growth. I mean, we were in closed beta for over 2 years. That's kind of the level of demand and the level of pipeline that we managed to do. We didn't hire a single marketing person for the first 2-3 years.
It was all referral?
It was all referral, word of mouth, and our relationships, because we're already in the ecosystem for many years before we launched the business, which, by the way, is something that people don't, I think, appreciate the value of enough. Building something into your own industry, you already have an immediate leg up than going to something completely new. So, yeah.
100%. And then what you provided that time was somehow already had high competition between the offline market. I'm not sure about if you had competitors digitally, but the offline market was really big.
Yeah. We didn't really have much competition on the digital end, particularly in this region where we're focusing on. There was a few things that do some of the things that we do, maybe in Europe or in the US. But even there, not a ton of competition, but some. But yes, of course, the offline market, you've got lawyers, you've got incorporation specialists, PROs, et cetera, and accountants who are referring for these things. So that was basically our competition. It's to try and go head to head with the traditional, while also educating users on seeing this as something that can be bought digitally, because that's in itself is a new concept for, you know, for this product, right? It's not like, it's what e-commerce did with certain goods. We were trying to do that with something that people are not yet used to buying digitally.
I see. Yeah. Anyway, you were in good ecosystem because startups are somehow advanced. They think digitally. They try new things.
Yes.
So somehow you had a good customer profile, but in the same time, for sure, awareness has to be there to be able to attract them.
I think, we're fortunate in a way, in the sense, as you said, in the region, people are very tech forward, very digitally savvy, very young population as well. So, you know, that part is easier. But the part that's difficult is to just get them to view this product as something that is digital and to view this product as something that you can do without sitting down with a human in an office and chatting, because people also like that, right?
And they would like, they have so much questions, they want quick answers.
Exactly. And it's an important thing and it's a complicated thing. So yeah, you're trying to digitize it. You're trying to educate. You're trying to have the experience be kind of as easy as possible. And but you're also trying to avoid being dragged into being seen as an advisor or being, you know, I just want to sit down and talk to you, because that's not the point of what we're trying to achieve.
I see. Yeah. Two things I want to highlight in this episode based on our conversation. Number one, as I understand, your marketing activities was a lot about awareness. So I'm sure you did the webinar, you did the events, you did a lot of free activities to be able to reach to the maximum. Yeah. And usually those startups, the first time startup, they don't think about that. They try to avoid that, but it's very important, correct?
Extremely important. You got to be your own marketeers at the end of the day. Nothing wrong with hiring up marketing capability, but that, you know, whatever it is, might be 6 months for people, it ended up being almost 3 years for us. There's an initial phase where there's plenty to do. There's plenty for you to learn, particularly as founders or senior management, that you should be really at the forefront, speaking to your customers, doing your own marketing, getting the word of mouth, listening to those early customers, iterating quickly.
What was the most powerful one?
The most powerful activity, free advice is pretty good, particularly when, you know, we're lucky, again, because we're lawyers. Legal advice is quite valuable. It's quite expensive. So if you're giving it away for free, it's great. People love it. So, but it's, you know, it's a lot of workshops. And it's also, you should always look for hacks, right? And one great hack is, why not find more established partner that already has reach, that has, you know, a newsletter, that has an ecosystem, and offer them the free content and let them push it out, right? So it's one less thing for you. So we partnered government initiatives, larger accelerators, VCs. We solve a pain point for them, get great content and give time for free. They've got a distribution network and a captive audience. It's kind of a win-win.
Very clear. And I think one of your challenges in the business that you get a lot of startups set up a new account, put their information, but they are not ready for the next step, such as setting their company or getting that set up the cap table or whatever.
Yeah.
And that is quite difficult when you see you have 1,000 startups on your platform, but you have 10 customers only.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's very, very fair. And that was definitely the case for us as well. I mean, we, again, in the beginning, it was the founders, but, you know, we had to build a team around and some data analytics tools around, you know, customer success, completion rates, concierge services, the reaching out. But also, it's one of the biggest challenges that never ends for designing and perfecting the product is, you know, reducing those failure rates, making it as easy as possible. Explaining as much as possible, right? But yeah, I mean, ultimately, when you're dealing with somebody's company, which is quite precious to them, you're never going to remove the human element entirely. We've accepted that. The question is just, you know, trying to push the line of when the humans need to intervene as much as possible. But like any business, and frankly, you ask anybody who's in even pure SaaS businesses, There's usually a pretty sizable human element, customer success team, whatever you want to call it, sitting beside them that have to engage, of course, and help their customers. I'm not sure there's really a way around that. You know, we're users of CRM software. We're users of, you know, customer ticketing software. All this sort of SaaS that's out there, and all of them have account managers, customer success, in-depth demos, a lot of hand-holding and a lot of human time. It's just kind of part of it.
So as I understand from you, you had started the journey with a couple of features, freemium model, back up with the offline services, and that for couple of years, let's say 3 to 4 years, then what happened then? I'm sure there is some development happened, and I know Clara from day one, since launching. Great. I saw that, and I checked it last month.
Yeah.
Big difference.
You saw the progress? Okay,
yes,
good.
I feel you. I understand how you build this step by step. You were slow building it step by step, because also difficult people to interact and keep doing it, keep accessing your platform and improving and adjusting. And also the cycle of the customer itself is long. Even dealing with your platform, he needs you only a certain period of in a year, then till next year or 2 years even.
Yeah, very true, very true. Look, a number of things happened. I think outside of the product itself, one of the most valuable lessons that kind of any aspiring entrepreneur needs to learn is market sizing is really important. It's probably one of the most important things, more important than your features, more important than your idea. Probably the only other more important element is actually the team. Outside of the team, it's market size, right? If you want to attract venture investment, and that's not necessarily the case for everybody, but if that's what you're looking for and you need to be able to deliver venture scale outcomes, right? So you need to have a really, really large potential market size. One of the things that we found out, as much as, you know, we're a startup, we love startups, it's always going to be a huge part of our DNA, just startups is probably too small. So we had to increase the focus of the product to be able to service SMEs, to service other segments who still also want to set up companies, manage them, do a lot of the same things they're already very, very good at. So I think the first thing was increasing the market size by both operationally and from a product perspective, widening the scope a little bit, okay? And I think if I had to guess, I think most startups go through this at some point where they're like, okay, this is great. We validated the idea, but you know, we need different features, different customer segments, different geographies, whatever it might be, to really be able to capture a large enough market size for this to be investable and take it to the next stage. So that's one. Two, with a complex product like this, I think focus is really important. So as you said, you know, we went quite broad, but then we narrowed down a little bit. We know what we're good at. We know what, you know, customers really, you know, really love about it. And we double down on that. We go deeper on the features, but narrower on the feature set. So we're really, really kind of homing in on our features that are around setting up and managing the company, and less on the due diligence and the data room and all that stuff and commenting and sharing profiles. And then equity as well. That's the second kind of limb to that, your cap table, your ESOP, your scenario modeling, your convertibles. So increase the market segment and then really kind of went narrower but deeper on a couple of the really important features for our customers, the critical features from their perspective. There's a few other things that happened, which I can talk about in terms of the business model, et cetera, but those were the first learnings, the first developments on what Clara does.
And the same business model was when you start to expand to another bigger market size?
The original kind of B2C model, it's still there, but it's increasingly, it's a decreasing part of the revenue. So the second thing we realized is, well, when you're going after these bigger markets, it's, you know, it would be the investment required and the team you need to build to be able to go after all these markets and all these segments yourself direct to consumer is quite high as a startup, which didn't have those resources. But it's a lot easier if you do it on a B2B basis or a B2B to C basis, right? So you find the nodes in the market that actually need this product. So law firms, VCs, accelerator programs, government initiatives, whatever it might be, where they've got their own cohorts of, you know, dozens or hundreds of startups that they need to help. And we started establishing relationships with them. It's a longer sales cycle, but that way you can, you know, you can deal with a single customer that's a node that can deliver to you 100 or 200 end users at a time. So increasingly we're seeing our operations are more B2B, but we still, of course, have to look after the end user. But in terms of the sales funnel, it's a lot more B2B.
So with the B2B, you charge one entity, such as the incubator, where you can serve more than the startup, or just partnership model?
Both. So it's up to them, really. Some of them pay for it on behalf of their users, customers, cohorts, whatever you want to call it, constituents. And some of them just act as the funnel and a strategic partner. And then the end user still pays us. So that's kind of B2B to C. So we do both.
Okay. Those two business models still with you till today, or another change happened recently?
They're both still with us today. But I wouldn't say a change, but we're adding an additional, I would say, layer to it, because, you know, we think we're very good at what we do. We've built this, you know, great set of tools and software, and there's a part to the software that the user never sees, which is how we manage, right? The admin part. There's back office tools, admin tools that you need to access to be able to manage all these companies that are under management and to service the end user or the end customer. And so what we found is that other traditionally offline providers really like the idea of digitizing their operations. And it's a very non-digitized space. So we're seeing more and more of them come to us and say, can you help us and, you know, let us use your software for our own operations and for our own customers? So it's another type of B2B, whereas where the end customer is actually another corporate service provider.
So we call it white label?
It can be, yeah. We have not launched white label yet, but that's kind of where it's going. Yeah.
So today, let's say I'm an agent who does, let's say, trade license.
Yeah.
I can subscribe with you and get my dashboard where it's interaction with my potential customer. They can access, so, and they can use the same features which you have.
That's where it's moving. Yeah, so there's two bits. They can just use the back office part that nobody sees anyway, but it digitizes their internal operations, mm-hmm. right? Automates their internal operations, mm-hmm. allows them to be a lot more efficient. And then there's the client-facing portal, which mm-hmm. they will be able to white label at some point and deliver to their end users. And that's kind of, I guess, continuing in the theme of moving towards the nodes, moving to more towards the kind of enterprise B2B side of things, it is a lot easier. Mm-hmm. It is a lot easier when you're dealing with complex systems as well, because my customer all of a sudden is an expert in the space as well, right? Whereas before, my customer is somebody I had to spend a lot of time educating, which we love doing, but it's a lot more time consuming. Right? You can definitely see the gravity on the business and on the business model is pulling towards enterprise B2B and away from kind of B2C.
Clear. I'm very curious to know what you mentioned earlier, that
sure.
business model, there is something happened with the business model, but you don't want to talk about it. Actually, this is why we are here, our podcast, to talk about those things.
I didn't want to talk about it then in that part. Yeah. So, I mean, look, part of it, as I said, is the big shift to kind of more B2B. But I think another part of it is we all want to scale. We want to go to different jurisdictions, different geographies. And one of the things that we found, which many people before us have found as well, is that really it's a very slow process if you pick a market, build everything, do everything yourself. And it's a lot easier to focus on the most value add, the part that you're most expert at, and get the help of local partners to do other bits. So for us, that's really, it's the software, it's the automation, the digitization, the structuring of the data, the user experience, all of that, right? Our marketing, our brand. But we want to enter a few additional markets, and we have entered a few additional markets without having to build local teams. And so we have started partnering up with providers, could be corporate service providers who are already in those markets who are licensed, for them to execute for us on the ground. And we just live as the, you know, true software only layer. So I think that's kind of the end point of our original vision, which is to create something that is actually purely digital. Because with this stuff, there's always humans, there's always, and so we're moving more of that human element to third party partners and less doing everything ourselves. And that allows us to enter market in 3 months instead of 12 months, for example. And I think that's going to be the future, like asset light, great partners who have their niches and have their expertise. And we really focus on the bit that's our expertise.
Yeah, that's a smart move, because I have been seeing a lot of startups creating some digital solution, struggle with the operation behind that, because sometimes you need to do online and offline, yeah. And that offline activities grow more and more, become more complicated with the bigger number of online user, yeah. And then you ended up in a bad situation where, yeah, it looks like you look to that very, very clear focus and try to avoid it from the beginning.
100%. I mean, honestly, if you are a digital and physical business, you're not a digital business. That's the reality, right? You're a physical business with some digitization, or your physical business that's tech-enabled. Nothing wrong with that. But if you, and I mean that from a service provision, not from a customer service. Of course, you always have humans from a customer service perspective. So if you still have those elements, and there's nothing wrong with having those elements as you learn, as you scale, there's nothing wrong with having those people in-house so you can, you know, be close to them and digitize even more of their expertise. But, you know, if you don't eventually move away and position yourself purely as a digital-only product, you're never really going to be one. You're never really going to be a true kind of tech or part of a tech stack. You're always just going to be a traditional business that has some efficiencies with some digital kind of layers on top.
And I will be wondering why you didn't try to integrate financials, project management to task management, yeah, because then it will be my destination platform as a startup to access every day and do many things.
Yeah, it's a good question. Accounting, HR, banking, all of that, right? It's a very good question, because it's exactly where we should be and where we want to be, right? We just want to be the, you know, company OS. So if you're asking me about, you know, the future where I would see this, this is exactly where I would see it. It's not just about company formation or post-formation management. We take your company or multiple companies, hopefully, that you have, and we put it at the core of our offering, and it's anything that you need in relation to that company. It's equity, yes, it's registration, it's all those other things that we mentioned, you know, integrations, HR, accounting, whether we do them ourselves, whether we work with partners, and really be the landing place, the landing page, your desktop essentially for your company and everything you need to kind of run it successfully. So that's definitely all on the roadmap, but you know, you have to.
And the top priority?
I think, you know, watch the space. You know, watch Clara for some exciting announcements soon. But we're going to be working in stealth for a while. But we're definitely working hard towards that vision.
I see. Then, as I understand from you, you were talking about the future of Clara, where you will implement more activities departments into the system where startup use more. What about today? What about after 5 or 10 years?
Yeah,
I'm an entrepreneur. I wanted to copy Clara, but for sure I'm not going to copy 10 years back business model. So, where do you see your? By the way, what is the how you position your startup? Clara? Yes, it's SaaS model, but what is that category under Clara? And then, what future of that model or that category?
I mean, to be honest, I think the SaaS element will probably end up being entirely on the B2B end. So it will be kind of invisible to the user. So those will be our customers. If I'm thinking 5 years from now, 10 years from now, the majority of our revenue is coming from the B2B side of things. And the users just get to, you know, benefit from the platform. And we're helping those business partners service them. And the future is going to be a bit more complex. I think, as I said, there's all these different areas that you mentioned that we want to be able to provide for. So it's going to be a mix of subscriptions, one-offs, transaction fees, integrations, partner fees, et cetera, et cetera. So probably complex, probably diverse, but I would say primarily B2B. Like, I think if ultimately, you know, I would like to see Clara be kind of stealth in the background as far as the end user is concerned. But we're enabling this amazing infrastructure across different jurisdictions and different partners who are working with us. But yeah, that's, I think that's the vision.
And what about AI?
Sorry?
What about AI?
Of course, we made it very far without talking about AI.
I'm just waiting.
Look, I mean, leaving aside all the hype, I mean, AI is amazing and tools are getting more and more impressive every few weeks I check. The interesting thing about Clara is that it actually has a really, really obvious AI use case, right? We've got a ton of data. We've got a ton of complexity. It's the type of thing that people want to communicate with on a natural language basis. You know, going back to what we said earlier, you know, the historically, it's I'm sitting down with a lawyer in their office and we're just chatting through what I need, right? There's a ton of things that you want to query. There's a ton of things that you want to ask for in terms of service, raising service requests. And there's a ton of things that you want to ask for in terms of customer support and technical support because, you know, as I said, it's a complex, multi-layered product. So yeah, absolutely. We are kind of already actively building AI tools. We don't want to release anything until it's really, really ready. But, you know, I'll tell you actually a funny story. Most people don't know this. The original idea for Clara was actually a bot. It was just going to be a chatbot to help you with your legals, with a few of those things. So we're kind of working backwards, but towards that vision where, you know, if you want to use the traditional user interface, you can. If you want to do any feature, any function, any engagement, extract any piece of information, make any payment, you'd be able to do it just through chat. You'd be able to query, bubble up, report, extract, share, all through chat, essentially.
This is exactly AI, and looks like you were thinking ahead your...
Yes, ahead of the beyond market. The technology, unfortunately. But yeah, now the technology is pretty much there. So yes, outside of the business model, I wouldn't even say 5 years. Within a year or two, you should be able to just have Clara on your phone with audio and just chat with it like you would chat with your lawyer and ask them to do a bunch of things with your company, with your all those other verticals that we might enter into as well.
It's going to be my legal assistant, but I don't like to say only legal because
exactly
to help me legal. Other yeah. than that, yeah. right? Yeah.
Yeah. Although footnote, as a lawyer, I have to say, it's not going to be your lawyer and it's not going to be giving you advice, financial or legal or otherwise, but it will certainly help and make you or sort of delay you need to then go to your lawyer or to your advisor. You should always still go to them. We're never going to replace them, but hopefully we can delay it and make it a bit more efficient for you.
Thank you so much, Ahmed, for today. Very useful information for those guys who yeah. are trying to set up their own business or trying to improve their business model. It was very useful information today.
Great. Thanks for having me. It was fun.